experiment has been going for about 2 years, and I guess what we believe is that the practice of free speech is more essential to democracy than voting once every 4 years. That democracy is like a muscle. Unless you exercise it, it'll soon disappear. And we're actually entering a period now where a lot of things we grew up with, basic assumptions like the Geneva Conventions and human rights in the Western world, are quickly evaporating. And that's got a lot to do with this endless war that George Bush has declared. Shannon Airport is a significant site for the invasion of Iraq. It was the statistics released this week is that 330,000 US troops passed through Shannon Airport in the past 12 months. That's 900 troops a day. It's a major pit stop for US invading troops to get from North America to Iraq. And this is a personal concern for myself, because 3 years ago, just before the war, myself and four other people broke into Shannon Airport and with simple household hammers were able to disable a US Navy warplane.
Well done.
And it was significant to do that because the previous 10 years, US Navy and the British Navy and the Australian Navy and the US Air Force and British Air Force had enforced a genocidal sanctions regime that had killed 1.5 million children under the age of 5 in Iraq. Previous to that, of course, the British, American and Irish governments were supportive of Saddam Hussein throughout the 1980s. The Irish government actually sold Saddam's military beef on credit throughout the 80s when he was involved in a hostile war against Iran. British Aerospace, Raytheon, other arms corporations in the United States and Britain tooled him up with equipment for that war. Now, we were sold this war on basically three lies. One was that this was a war against weapons of mass destruction. And the British and American military have occupied Iraq for nearly 3 years, yet they have found no weapon of mass destruction. Where the weapon of mass destruction throughout the 1990s was that, indeed the sanctions policy that killed so many kids. We were sold this war that it was a war on terror. And what we've created there is a swampland for fundamentalist terrorism. And Peter Ustinov made the observation before he died that the war is the terror of the rich and terrorism is a war of the poor. And the Irish government has put us in a situation like the people of Madrid, like the people of London, like Australian tourists in Bali, in a situation where we are butchering people on a daily basis and where we are vulnerable, of course, to getting some blowback or payback in terms of attacks here in Ireland. I believe the Irish government have accepted that risk, and like Tony Blair, who knew that the July 7th or 5th attacks would occur, has planned for the wake of those attacks. We believe the way out of this is through non-violence and through direct action. We've been brought to trial twice last year, in March and in October. We're charged with $2.5 million criminal damage to the US warplane and 100 euros to the window of the hangar. And twice we went to trial, twice we wanted to say what we did and why we did it, and we called witnesses, people like Jimmy Massey, a sergeant in the US Marines who was sent to Iraq, whose unit killed 30 civilians at checkpoints, to come and testify to the context of why we felt we had to act. And twice our trial has collapsed. First time because the judge acted illegally, and the second time because the judge, when he was confronted, admitted that he was a friend of George Bush's, so much so that he'd met him when he was governor of Texas and was invited to the two inaugurations. Now, this judge wasted your money and my money, taxpayers' money, running a trial for 10 days. And on the first day of that trial, a woman who was chosen for the jury got up and said, "Look, I've just remembered my daughter is a stewardess for Aer Lingus. I really can't be on this jury because of perceived prejudice." And we said, "Well, we congratulate you on your integrity." And the judge said, "I too congratulate you on your integrity." And he sat there and he's asked for 10 days, being a friend of George Bush, knowing that, you know, perceptions that this we couldn't have a fair trial. So we go back to trial on July the 5th. I believe that our prosecution is being driven by the US Embassy. I believe it was an Irish decision that the prosecution know that they can't get a conviction against us. When our trial collapsed this time, 8 of the jury congratulated us on our actions. We received Christmas cards from members of the jury. It's a total waste of money to put us on trial again. We're going back to trial because the US Embassy in Dublin are demanding that we be prosecuted. There is hope. There is significant things, you know. In a week where another 11 US soldiers died, where a Black Hawk went down this morning killing 12 more, where 130 people lost their lives in suicide bombings, in a week that is totally grim, there is hope. And there's hope. Last night, a couple of hundred people gathered again at Shannon Airport to say this is the scene of the crime. This is an ongoing crime. It's against our constitution, which aspires to be neutral in times of war. A constitution and neutrality came out of the experience that less than 100 years ago, this town was very much like Baghdad. It was occupied by an imperial force. It was, black and tan death squads had the run of the town. Now, it's not too far from our experience to know what kind of response that brought up from people like you and me at that time. It's not far from our experience that in the north, when people had their houses trashed and their family abused, that it produced a generation of people who were willing to go to London and bomb the shit out of it and risk their lives and risk a lot of time in jail. So how much imagination does it require of us to know that if we do that to people in Iraq, that response is predictable? There are over 1,000 people from this island working as mercenaries in Iraq. There's over 600 former prison officers from Northern Ireland and 400 members of the RUC working, making up to 1,000 quid a day. There's an enormous amount of money being made there. I know 30 members of the Australian SAS, once they completed their tour, resigned from the Australian military and returned immediately as mercenaries. It's an enormous cash cow for certain people, but it's creating things that we'll be paying for in years to come. This is Speaker's Corner. It's an experiment in free speech and democracy. Please interject, ask questions, have a go at me, whatever. It'll be more interesting, otherwise it's a big monologue.
Have there been any actions that have been...
He's a plant.
Outside Iraq, have there been any actions that have jeopardised the US war effort as much as your simple action in Shannon?
Well, there's been a lot. In Scotland, at the time of the mobilisation, two train drivers who were told to move munitions refused to move it. It was interesting that the support they got from their trade unions was a lot stronger than what occurred in Shannon. Probably in terms of civilian peace movement, what occurred, Mary Kelly acted and we acted, and Bertie Ahern was so freaked out he deployed the Irish Army to defend the American Army or military against the Irish peace movement. Three US companies transporting troops, and most of the troops come through Shannon on private American airlines rather than military planes, evacuated the country, and of course the plane that was going to Iraq got turned around and sent back home. So it was a very significant action in terms of what effectively happened in the short term, but obviously, symbolically, it was very humiliating for the Irish government.
Do you know the way the Gardaí are deployed to stop people like Tim Horrigan taking photographs?
Yeah.
And that they're not actually going in and investigating these strange jets that are going through. Do you think this is deliberate? Do they know exactly what's going on?
I think it's a total act of negligence. You know, when the Gardaí are asked, are there people who have been kidnapped in Europe, been transported through Shannon Airport to Guantanamo Bay, and it is recorded that the planes that have kidnapped people in Europe and taken people to be tortured in Guantanamo have landed at Shannon quite regularly, the guards say, well, we have no evidence. Well, they have no evidence because they haven't gone and looked for any. They haven't checked the planes, you know? And they have this this kind of cultivated ignorance that lets them off the hook. And
so these orders from the top, do you think?
I think it's orders from the top, and I think it's a breakdown in their responsibilities, which means... you know, citizens like ourselves have to take up that responsibility. And, you know, we're charged with $2.5 million criminal damage without lawful excuse. We believe we have a lawful excuse and are quite prepared to argue that in court if we can get a fair judge. And we've been through two already who had to stand down because they weren't fair.
Derek, what happens if you get charged with $2.5 million? How do you pay it back?
How are you going to pay that back?
Hard label smashing up four airplanes.
You're going to Louisville, cuz.
Well, back in 1991, I was living in Washington, D.C., and I was revving up for the first Gulf War. Four of us who were working with homeless people made our way to Griffiths Air Force Base in upstate New York, and we broke into that base and disarmed a B-52 bomber. Now, B-52s went to drop 30% of everything that was dropped in that war in terms of napalm, cluster bombs, fuel air explosives. The one we engaged was on 20-minute scramble alert and did not fly for the next 2.5 months. We were put on trial. Under American law, there's a necessity defense. If you can prove there's an imminent threat to human life. By the time we came to trial, Harvard University was saying 50,000 children under the age of 5 had been killed through either direct bombardment or because the US Air Force and US Navy purposely targeted water treatment works and sewage treatment works, knowing by bombing them they would unleash plagues of gastroenteritis, cholera and typhoid. So we felt we had that element of defence. Two, that we had no legal alternative but to act. And we felt we had that covered. Three, that there had to be some chance of success. And we felt quite successful grounding this B-52. So we felt we had a defence. We were denied that defence by the judge and sent to jail for 13 months. Put on Con Air, very exciting trip. See America for less than $2 a day and sent to Texas. When we were active in England against the genocide in East Timor, British Aerospace took a private High Court injunction out on 13 of us they regarded as organisers. They said, if you agree to this injunction being lifelong, we won't charge you court costs. Four of us said, no, we're not going to cooperate. We had 2 hours defending ourselves in the High Court, and we were left with a £100,000 legal bill each for the other side's lawyers. So they have ways of grinding you down, you know. You get the justice you can afford.
You reckon it'll be $100,000 just legal fees, and they'll waive the $2.5 million, or?
Okay. How they're going to get $2.5 million? They've spent $2 trillion on this war effort. $2.5 million to the Pentagon is nothing, you know. I mean, a lot of it goes into wasted profits for people like Dick Cheney's Halliburton company. And what's so tragic? Now, having met a number of veterans from this war, Kelly Doherty, from the Colorado National Guard, and who came to our first trial, Jimmy Massey from the US Marines, the people who get sent to this war are the working poor. 40,000 members of the US National Guard are now deployed in Iraq. Now, these are not professional soldiers. They receive 1 weekend of training a month, 2 weeks a year. They're people who join the National Guard to survive economically in America, having a second and third job, and they find themselves sent to a war by Dick Cheney and George Bush, who managed to avoid service in the Vietnam War when they were drafted, and managed to do that through their connections by being rich and powerful. So it's very cynical. Over 2,000 of these young Americans, most who would have passed through Shannon, have returned in body bags. Those who committed suicide in return aren't counted. Over 11,000 have been returned the loss of limb and sound mind through combat situations. That's different from those wounded and injured, like today. When a Black Hawk helicopter goes down and 12 die, they're not part of that number. They're not counted as that number. So the costs are being borne by the working poor, people who are making the money out of it, of course, are the ultra-rich. And if Ireland spoke strongly, now people say, look, we're a small country here, we're insignificant, whether we go along to get along or not, doesn't make a difference. Now, if Ireland spoke clearly and said, this war, like the Pope has said, is immoral. If Ireland said, this war is illegal, like Kofi Annan has said, and if Ireland said, we're not having anything to do with it, that would have a huge effect on the Irish diaspora from Australia, where I'm from, that's involved in this war, the Irish diaspora in the United States, the Irish diaspora in Britain, where, of course, there are many members of the military whose background is Irish. And the clarity, and just I'll just get you, the comparison there is in 1984, New Zealand, a country very much the same size as this one, not in an economic partnership like the EU, maybe with 40 million more sheep, decided that they wouldn't have anything to do with nuclear weapons. And they stuck by that moral position. and they survived and thrived. And
I think the reason that they're using shackles, they know that the powers that be are afraid that if they say anything, they're going to be overpowered.
Well, I find it incredibly ironic because trying to understand the political spectrum here, every party claims to be nationalist, basically, you know? And they're saying, look, we can't afford to have an independent foreign policy because America won't let us have one, you know?
Fine Gael aren't nationalists.
What's that?
Fine Gael.
Aren't they?
No. I'd say Labour aren't that nationalist either.
But you've basically got a US military base in your country now, you know? That's the excuse they trot out. But when Giuliano, the former mayor of New York, a right-wing Republican, was asked that question when he was at Ireland, he said, no, American companies are here for one reason, to make money. They will leave when they're not making money. And, you know, you're an independent country, you should have your own foreign policy.
PDs aren't nationalist.
What's that?
PDs, they're multinationalist. They're foreign multinationals.
The only one that haven't had an armed wing. It'd be really scary if they did.
The armed wing is the Gardaí.
This has been a small experiment in free speech. It's been going for a couple of years. And it's quite ironic in terms of democracy in Ireland that the initial act that created the state, which was putting up a poster on a wall, is now criminal activity in Ireland, which is go figure. Those who control the media, of course, the rich and powerful, and that's why it's important, I think, to experiment with this kind of discourse, you know? And might hand it over to someone else.
Dudley.
Robbie, have a go.
Hey.
Come in closer, because you can't hear it.